Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. Do you know who you're talking to? I am so angry. Darn, I need a psychiatrist. And I have one today. I'm welcoming Raman Vaishnav back to this podcast, and I'm so glad to see you.
It's so good to see you, Jamie. Always.
And today we're going to talk about anger. Just anger is such a big thing for so many people, and it destroys so many relationships, but it's also an important emotion to have and to use properly. So we're just going to weigh in on that and see what happens. So when you were thinking about doing this, were there any thoughts that came up in relation to what I just did?
In relation to what you just did? Mm-hmm. You mean it's kind of like start the fight?
Yeah. Surely not. Me.
I mean, that's why I laugh.
I'm kind, caring, gentle, and Christian woman, you know. I don't get angry.
I can certainly relate to being the one that's in that position and the one that's receiving, you know, that anger. So, just hearing it, you know, I think anybody who hears it can resonate with knowing what you're talking about. You know, we can identify anger a mile away. But, I guess the thing that struck me most as I thought about, you know, coming to talk to you about this topic today is the reality of really a fear. You know, fear is probably the most of what we're talking about when it comes to anger. You know, anger has a whole spectrum, but the problematic anger, you know, let's say you got, you know, mild annoyance on the one end, but then blind rage, you know, blackout, dissociative rage on the other end, you know. At some point, there's a problem, right? You know, mild annoyance, we don't need therapy for those things. But, you know, when it crosses over into that place where we regret, you know, where we hurt others, where we have all kinds of guilt, shame, and remorse as a result of it, that's where fear is the problem, when the anger is that level. My anger, my rage is directly proportional to my level of fear about something. And so what I've learned about my own struggles with anger is, you know, when I get to that point, I need to recognize it and then pause enough to ask myself, okay, what is it? What is it that I'm afraid of right now? And when I can do that, everything, then I have a chance. If I can't do that, if I can't stop myself, catch myself and have that moment of asking myself, okay, what is this really about? Then, you know, it doesn't take much to tip me over the edge and then, you know, I'm in that rage mode and stomping on people. And not so much in more as much as, in, you know, pre-recovery, but it's still a demon in there.
I know for me, the anger tends to come when I feel unrecognized or like I'm being abandoned, or I'm being seen as insignificant or discounted. Mm. You know, the fear of being unseen or unimportant, or is that what you see mostly?
Yeah, I see a fear of rejection, a fear of failure, a fear of being seen as a failure and therefore rejected because I'm a failure. I think of a time, one of the things that comes to mind when I think of anger and the fear part of it is fear of losing my child. You know, when my child disappeared two children disappeared at a football game, high school football game, super crowded because it was family night and they had all kinds of activities around the football field. And they were just going to the concession stand together and coming back, and They didn't come back. And so I go looking for them. I can't find them. Trying to find them with my iPhone, and it's leading me to this abandoned section of the stadium, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, the wheels are spinning, and I'm sure that you know, they've been kidnapped and somebody threw their phone in a garbage can underneath this bleacher, you know. And then when I find them, the fear is gone, but then rage, you know, what the heck did you do, you know?
Where have you been?
Yes.
Oh. I'm so glad to see you. I'm going to hurt you.
Exactly.
Oh. Which I think in the anger, a lot of times that's the paradox of it, is that it is because we're afraid of losing someone that we love, that we treat them with such anger and such rage because of that fear. Mm. And to really recognize that, I think, is so completely important. Is certainly an issue in most of the things that, or feelings of having been betrayed or made a fool of. I mean, I see a lot of that as an anger thing, and just the fear of trusting again.
Yes.
And the anger keeps me from having to trust again. Mm-hmm. As long as I hold on to that negative thing, then I don't have to really forgive you. And there was a pastor, Wes, and I will say this because it needed to be a pastor, and he said, you know, he took out all the passages on forgive, and he said, you know, read several forgiveness passages out of Scripture, that he said to his congregation, the new F word in this church is forgive, you know, and so turn to your neighbor and say F you. and I thought, that one word changes a life. It changes a response. It changes so much. Because, you know, for me, anger helped me survive. I mean, I talk about the language of survival. And you know, that whole issue of controlling your environment because there's chaos around you.
Yes.
And having some semblance of feeling of being okay, or knowing what to do, or being somehow in charge of what was happening to you. And then when that would get hit at, I would, you know, it's control, fight, run, or freeze. And so we just look at how that is also fear. Fear in operation. And the choice is, I can either get really, really angry and try to regain control, which I think a lot of anger is about, I'm going to make you do what I want you to do. I will, you know, control this environment, or I'm leaving.
Yes.
And mine was leaving, but I would leave with angry energy. I mean, and that anger helped me to survive. I mean, but it became very self-destructive, because my default was, I'll show you, I'll hurt me, and I'd show you by getting drunk. I'll show you by picking up somebody. Sure. I'll show you by leaving you, you know, that, and then I get on the other side of the door and it's like, oh, you know, you're not there anymore. You know, it's like, I guess I'm not showing you anything because it's no longer there. But I find myself, even now, as old as I am, having that default. If something happens that hits a button in me, my first thought is, I'm out of here. You know, but it's an angry statement. It's not a, oh, gee, I'm just leaving. No, it's not that. It's like, I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a really young decision I made. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a defensive shield, you know, to protect me against those softer, more gentle or more delicate emotions, those things that would be completely vulnerable and that I don't want others to have access to or see me in. You know? So if I push you back with my shield of anger, you know, then you're not going to get close to the real stuff that's underneath it.
The sad thing is, I think that is that unwillingness to be close becomes a habit. And so when love gets too close, I'm talking about sometimes you got a really messy, dark room and the light shines in it, you push it, you just turn it out because it's hard to clean it up. But that fear of being hurt, the fear of being vulnerable, is so powerful that when love approaches, the tendency is to treat it with contempt. You know, I'm going to be sarcastic. I'm going to cheat on you. I'm going to go get drunk. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to, you know, I can't receive love, because to receive love, I have to be vulnerable.
Yeah. I need something to give me some safe distance again. Mm-hmm. You know, what is that going to be? You know, it gets too close for comfort. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that vulnerability is what I feel. That vulnerability is what I fear. And, you know, from, like you said, the chaotic childhood, who do you trust? Who, you know, if I couldn't trust my dad, I couldn't trust my mom. At some point I can only trust me. You know, I can only do it on my own, you know, and then we decide to do it that way. And then we get into our addiction and we realize we can't even trust ourselves. Now what the hell do we do? You know, mm-hmm. And so we have to relearn, you know, from scratch, how to trust, how to build a relationship, how to accept the ups and downs that are going to come with any meaningful relationship, you know, the push and pull that's going to come with any meaningful relationship. And it's so hard. And it really has kept my closest relationships still all not that close because of the fear. Because of the fear. Not necessarily because of the anger, but I've done a lot of damage, you know, with the anger, you know, hurt people in ways, just with my words, you know, that break hearts and can't take back, you know. But yeah, that too close for comfort is very uneasy. Mm-hmm. But you know, and it's the opposite. I need to think about it in the opposite way because it's a beautiful place to get.
Yeah.
You know, and if I could just, and I'm still not there, I think I've gotten closer to leaning into it, but I still, you know, yeah, I even thinking about it, I, you know, it's this emotional nakedness.
And in scripture, in the garden, it says Adam and his wife were both naked and neither felt any shame. And shame comes into this whole thing really big. But the word naked in the Bible simply means vulnerable or unable to defend yourself. And so I think that is something that is anxiety provoking when you've been hurt a lot. Especially if people have been physically abused or sexually abused or betrayed in a lot of different ways, then the whole idea of being unable to defend yourself, being vulnerable and really allowing yourself to be safe in the closeness with another person is so terrifying. And yes, the anxiety that comes when somebody gets too close into your space is really, you're like, oh, gee, I don't think so. You know, yeah, I'll just do something to make sure you go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to because we long for love.
Yes, we need it.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at something the other day and we're talking about we have the basic desire to be attached. We have to be attached. We'll die if we're not attached from birth. I mean, it's like we can't grow ourselves from day one. We are flock herd animals. Mm-hmm. We have to be close. As over and against, and the other desire is to be authentic, to be able to be ourselves, to use our gifts, to be, you know, and those two things start fighting with each other, you know, because if you grow up in chaos, you give up the authenticity in order to be in a relationship and be attached. And so the thought of being in a relationship becomes the thought of losing yourself, you know.
People pleasing. Mm-hmm. How do I keep the peace?
That doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Oh, goodness. Too true.
So I don't know, but anger in its raw form. I mean, I have so. I mean, I'm sure you do. I mean, because you work a lot in the prison setting, and there's enough anger to go around in that place, you know, for sure.
Certainly. Yeah, even just on my way out the door today. Yeah, I got a blast of somebody's anger. Yeah, it it can be to the point where the person is ready to kill themselves and anybody else that's around. You know, it's that out of control. It's that blind. And I think I think all of us can relate, but I know that I can relate to the intensity and the power and the blindness that comes when I'm in that state. There's this, when I get to that tipping point, and I don't know where that is, you know, where, you know, I can recognize annoyance. It doesn't take much to get me annoyed, but when I get to that point where it's this rage, where it's this out of control rage, where I'm ready to hit something or hit somebody, and I'm so incredibly certain of how right I am.
Mm-hmm. There's no, never a wrong rage.
I mean, my goodness. Yeah.
And, until afterwards.
Yes. I can't believe how wrong I was, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's never directed at people that we're not connected to. Hmm. You know, I mean, I think that kind of rage is most of the time at the person we profess to love the most. Mm. We do these most unlovable things and expect a loving response. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but you don't mean to.
Yes.
You know, mine is cold. My rage doesn't come out. It goes cold. I mean, I lose the ability to talk, which is unusual for me. I mean, it's like I don't usually lose the ability to talk. But that whole, I mean, I've been known to be halfway out of a room and not even realize I was leaving.
Hmm.
You know, because my whole thing is I got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me years. I watched my sister. My sister would fight back. And when my mother was drinking, she would fight back. And that never fared well for her. I mean, she would get abused. And I remember one night in particular that it was pretty bad. And I remember I was in seventh grade, and I remember thinking, that was stupid. You know, she should have just shut her mouth. And I thought, I'm not going to do it that way. And I would just stand there, and I would detach from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a way of dealing with a lot of things. I would just detach. It took me a long time not only to get my anger back, but to recognize that spectrum of anger where it does not deserve murderous rage for somebody to be late for dinner. it does not even deserve murderous rage if somebody doesn't like you or they're leaving you as an adult. This is not fatal. If it's not fatal, it doesn't deserve that because that level of rage is about survival.
Hmm. So when you left, what were you trying to escape?
The chaos of the drinking, the abuse, you know, just the stress of the chaos around there. It was just a lot I think I just was in a lot of ways trying to escape myself because I'd become so self-destructive. And that was what I would do. I would go do self-destructive things.
So that energy still came out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just came out at me instead of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, you know, I mean, as I say sometimes in Making Peace and Beyond, you know, it's if you never get angry, you're probably fixing the toast, but you're burning it. You know, I mean, it's going to come out. You will be as passive aggressive as you, you know, it'll come out sideways. Mm-hmm. What will make you very, very sick.
Yeah.
You know, physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much physical illness comes from repressed anger and stuffed rage.
Yeah. My one therapist, Steve, says, you know, when we have these difficult emotions, we have two choices. We're either going to talk it out or we're going to act it out. But we're going to do one or the other. We can choose. And when I act it out, it's going to come out in confusing and unpredictable ways, sideways, like you said. Yeah. And usually we're probably at the wrong target.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My loving family that accepts me as I am gets blasted when I come home from a hard day at work, you know.
And then the spouse blasts the children and the children blast each other and then the youngest child blasts the dog, you know. I mean, it's like it passes right down.
And that's rolls downhill. You know,
it's like there is a legacy of a way of dealing with conflict that, you know, I remember being shocked that yelling at each other was not what everybody's family did. You know, that some people talked it out. When I was shipped out to live with my cousins, I remember coming in the house one day and they were upset with each other and disagreement with each other. And in my house, you just either you yelled about it or you avoided it. You didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came in the house and they were upset with each other. My cousins were talking to each other about something they disagreed about. And it was such a new thing for me that I sat on the steps and listened.
Hmm.
I mean, because I was like, they are mad at each other, but they are talking about it. and this was really neat, you know. And there wasn't that avoidance. There wasn't. There was a level of safety and trust with each other that they could talk about difficult issues without getting angry, without, you know, putting each other down and being sarcastic and being nasty to each other and storming off to bed. You know?
Yeah, seeing that was so foreign. I thought it was fake. Mm-hmm. I thought it's not real. You know, something's going to happen behind closed doors that I don't get to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and to realize my family today does not yell at each other. I mean, we talk about stuff. I mean, it's not that there isn't a time of anger. There's been some times when I've had to pull back to think about what I am feeling and process it and learn to deal with it in a way that I can then go back and talk about it. But I think that's the thing is, if you get angry or if you can't discuss it rationally or honoring and respecting the other person, then to back away. But then it's up to you to come back and say, hey, you know, I can think I can talk now, or forgive me for not being able to talk.
Too often I am afraid of that. Yeah. I know that I need to leave. You know, recognize I need to get out of here because otherwise I'm going to do something stupid that I regret, and I can't. I'm too angry to tolerate continuing in this moment. So I'm good at recognizing that. But then when it comes to coming back, too often, I'm like, we're okay.
We won't bring that up again. You know, that's too tense.
Yeah, let sleeping dogs lie. But I know that's not the right answer. And because it's going to fester. It's going to come up again, and it's going to come out sideways. Just about the dishes, you know, who loaded the dishwasher this way? Damn it!
That's right. And I'm going to now, you know, let it fester and build my self-justification system about how right I am to be upset about it and to have this resentment. And the whole word resentment just means resentiment, to refeel, to rub salt in my own wounds over and over again. And so I'm refeeling, you know, something that's already over to justify feeling the way I feel about it.
You know? Or I'll have an entire argument about something that never even happened.
Oh, yeah.
In my own head.
I used to think I was really angry and afraid of angry people. And then I realized I'm really more afraid of bringing up a topic that there's some heavy-duty feelings about, not because of their anger, but because of my potential anger.
Yes.
I mean, if I go up to you and I say my opening line, and then you say something really tacky, you know, I am afraid of what I will do. Mm-hmm. And because I know how mean I can be. Mm-hmm. I know how ugly and nasty I can be. And I'm really good at slicing people, you know. And I don't like that in me. I don't want that part of me to come out. You know, so, but it's definitely there. But I think, you know, anger as it is supposed to be used is like gas in the car. It was a protection thing. I mean, it's the energy to protect yourself. It's the energy when you feel threatened to protect yourself. So there is a place for it.
Yes.
But it's learning how and when to regulate it, to use it. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. How and when to regulate it, to use it. And I don't know. I don't know the answer, because it's a big blurry line between, you know, my justified rage, my justified anger versus where I go into insane rage, you know, and I can't even see it when it's happening, you know, that pivot point. I don't recognize it until I'm already sliding down the slippery slope. I recognize that. Mm-hmm. But by that time, something's already exploded internally.
That self-righteousness starts to come up.
Something's already gone off. The adrenaline is already flowing, and you know, fight or flight mode is already kicked off. And I need time. I need time. I don't know how to think my way out of it. I know that taking time to talk about it with like a sponsor or somebody in recovery or just a close friend that I can talk to and trust with it and unload on can buy me some time and maybe process things a little bit. But it's like, you know, once that physiologic experience has that cascade has been triggered, I have to wait till it's done. You know, I really have to wait till it's done. Can I recover from it quicker than I used to? I think so. And it's been through prayer. It's been through pause. It's been through, you know, let me go for a walk, you know, burn off some of this physical energy. Let me talk about it with somebody who knows, you know, where I'm at. You know, so many phone calls to sponsors or other guys in recovery during those times. But no matter what, once I get on that slippery slope, I don't know how to put the brakes on it. I don't know if you've gotten to the point where you can put the brakes on it, but it's going to take me a while. At least 20 minutes usually.
Yeah, I think getting to the pause, you know, knowing I wait for the click because anger and fear both click on. Mm. You know, it's like the kind of anger that is not useful. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what'd you say?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, that click on what was that? The fear.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same click. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's the survival click, you know, and I learned to, I think I've learned pretty much to try to pay attention to the click. Mm-hmm. And when the click clicks on, I need to click off. Mm. I need to back away for a minute. I need to pause. That's when the pause needs to happen, is when the click happens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be able to get myself back down and really think, okay, you know, what is that about? You know, and so often it's not even a justified click. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, sometimes I think it is, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, to be able to not shut people down because I get angry at them, you know, which I think is one of the best avoidance tactics ever, is if I get, my mother had this thing of, she would get angry and she would yell at you. Mm-hmm. And then if that didn't work, then she would start crying. And then everybody would just like, oh my goodness, you know, we got to stop doing whatever it is we got to do. And so for most of my life, well, all of my childhood, that worked. Mm-hmm. My father would get upset when she got upset, and then, you know, things would have to stop. So I learned to do that because, again, you learn to resolve conflict the same way it was done in your house most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I would do that. And then somebody said, Jamie, you know, you can get as angry as you want to, but when you finish being angry, we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh. So I started crying. and they said, here's some Kleenex and I'll hug you. I know this is a tough situation, but when you finish crying, we're going to talk. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling so helpless, like, I'm going to have this conversation that I don't want to have.
You know? Who was wise enough to do that for you?
This crazy shrink I was married to.
Oh, really?
So I went home and to my parents' house, and I had to have a serious conversation with my mother about the way she was treating the people who were taking care of her. Hmm. And so she started yelling at me, and I said, you know, I know this is hard for you, but I don't want you to have to go out of your home, and so I want to, you know, we need to talk about this. Mm-hmm. When you finish getting angry, are we going to talk? You know, so then she starts crying, and I said, yeah, I know this is hard for you, but, and within 30 seconds, she was like, stop it. And my father was like, what? You know, for 40 years, he had been controlled by that tactic. Hmm. You know, but I really saw, you know, how, you know, the whole survival behavior is to avoid anything that challenges your control.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it's about. It's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to not hear what I don't want to hear and not talk about what I don't want to talk about, or not be challenged on what it is that I'm doing or not doing. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's the whole thing that happens, is something is gone beyond my control and I'm going to do whatever it takes to avoid it.
Yes. And that compulsion to control is, you know, is so dependent on how we spent our childhood, what we experienced then, you know, what, you know, the level of chaos that the more chaos I experience as a child, the more I'm going to be compelled to control the things that I think I can control. And it's all, it's all out of my control in reality. Even my own choices, right? How much do I try to control my own choices? And I can't control those, for crying out loud. The only thing I have any control over.
And we don't have, I mean, I tell people sometimes, if you want to see how much control we truly have, hold your breath for 2 minutes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the very thing that gives us life, we cannot control for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes us think we have any control whatsoever? Mm-hmm. And I think this is the other thing that I think has happened to me is my faith has grown so much that I live a lot of time out of my spiritual life rather than my experiential life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what the world does or doesn't do is not nearly as triggering or important. I hate that word. But to me, most of the time when people use the word trigger, they're getting ready to either avoid something they don't want to talk about or do something that's totally inappropriate.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, but I think that if your experiential life controls who you are, you're constantly going to be back and forth and in and out of anger and avoidance and canceling people. But if you live out of your spiritual life so that you know who you are and whose you are, and you know you're already secure and valuable and significant, and then what somebody does or doesn't do doesn't control who you are.
Yes.
And that is, to me, that has been the biggest key, is to really realize that God's already told me who I am. I'm his beloved kid, you know, and I don't need to go into a situation trying to figure out who I am or whether you like me or don't like me or what that situation is, because I already know. So I'm going in as an ambassador, and there's some kind of strength that comes from that is really nice.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The peace that surpasses all understanding.
Yes.
That's one of the tools one of my favorite tools that you gave us from the Making Peace retreat is that those statements of affirmation that build. You know, you start with one statement the 1 week, then the next module there's two sentences, and you keep adding these words of affirmation about who I am in Christ,
right.
Who I am as a child of the Most High. You know, perfectly, wonderfully made, you know. And it's hard for me in my flesh to even pay attention to that, you know, especially when I'm feeling scrutinized or judged or ridiculed or threatened in any way, you know. But if I can reinforce that and get back to that, then more quickly, more easily, I can find peace or not lose it in the first place.
Right.
You know, not lose that serenity.
Yeah, it requires staying in the present, you know, because that's where God loves us, is in the present. He doesn't love us tomorrow or yesterday. He loves us today because that's where we exist. He exists in all those other places, but we don't.
No, we
so
don't.
He can't leave us. He can't love us where we don't exist, and he can't use us where we don't exist. So there's a really good book that I really like. It's called Unoffendable by Brant Hansen. And
I have it.
It is such a good book in terms of learning to pay attention to who you are and whose you are, and not being so reactive. I mean, we talk about, you know, when you react to what the other person just did. So if you yell at me, my first thought, because my little, you know, genes, you know, are to act as you did, which gives you total control over who I am.
Yeah, fight fire with fire.
And become fire. You become what you hate.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me that, and I hated it that they told me that. You become what you hate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have found that to be pretty true. If I hate prejudice, I become prejudiced against those who are prejudiced. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I hate, it's going to have some place to land that is just exactly where I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I hate angry people. I become angry at angry people. You know, I mean, it's like,
oh my goodness, yes.
It's like terrible. Mm. There's no hope there, you know. So, I think that's why we're not supposed to hate things.
Yes.
We're supposed to forgive things and just introduce a different way. I remember somebody saying one time, you know, if you don't want something or don't like something, don't give your energy to it. Build something different. And if it's not okay, whatever that was will fall away. If what you created is good, it will grow.
Mm.
You know, and I think it's like we don't need to give our energy to things we don't like, because then we become like them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things you just said about being present, you know, I hated when people told me about that early in recovery, you know, one day at a time, what, you know, give time, all those sorts of things, live and let live. And
keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. I didn't know what it meant, because I didn't know how to do it. Yeah, I'm always at that time, you know, regretting the past and fearing the future. Mm-hmm. And that was just destroying my ability to be healthy in the present. So now, you know, yeah, what's going on right now? What's the next right thing for right now? That's the prayer that's always answered. You know, mm-hmm. Lord, what's your answer for me for right now? Yeah. Not tomorrow.
That will be done right now.
not fix what happened yesterday. You know, get me out of that trick box that I screwed up yesterday. But what's the next right answer for right now? Always, you know, he doesn't promise to remove the storms, right? The storms are going to come. I'm going to be challenged. But he'll guide me through that storm, even if it's my own storm that I created, that I churned up with my own insanity. All right, pause. What's the next right? How do I? All I got in the darkest black, all I need to find is a pinpoint of light to see the way to walk. You know, mm-hmm. that's no bigger than that. And he'll give me that. He'll give me more than that. Right? He'll give me much more than that if I just ask.
Yeah, something that's been really apparent to me lately is just God's perfect provision, His perfect provision. And in the midst of the chaos, His perfect provision in the midst of the chaos. It's like Peter walking on the water. As long as he kept his eyes on Christ, he got what he needed to walk on the water. But if he kept his eye, if he turned to the winds and waves of his situation, he would sink.
Yes.
You know, and that is something that, you know, and I think our pride gets in the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's an old story about a guy who was very proud warrior person, and he was very important person. And he goes to a wise old man, and he says, "Tell me about heaven and hell." And the man says, "Who do you think you are that you could understand heaven and hell? You're just, you know, you're nobody. You couldn't possibly understand something as complicated as heaven and hell." And the guy's like, "Do you know who I am? Do you know what I'm doing?" You know, and the guy says, "Yeah, I know who you are. You're a stupid man." And the guy's getting really angry, and he's getting ready to hurt the wise man. And the wise man says, that's hell." And so he realizes the lesson, and he bows, and he's very humble, and he says, "And that's heaven." You know, and I think that the difference in the feeling state of those two places, you know, of those two things is right there in that. I mean, if we have to be self-important, then we're going to have a lot of anger at people and things that happen. But if we can walk in humble gratitude, then it's a whole different ballpark.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah.
Those two key things, humble and grateful, humble mm-hmm. and grateful. In any situation, if I can look for the things where I can be grateful, that insane whatever it was, just the reality, it just goes away, because it doesn't compare to the goodness mm-hmm. that's there.
And God's perfect provision is very real. Or we wouldn't be sitting here. Mm-hmm. It's so good to have you here.
So good to be here.
Oh,
with
wow.
you.
Yeah, God's brought us a long way.
You know, this is a year since the last podcast that we did.
Oh,
together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Has it been
within a week, yeah.
I'm sure that years don't last as long as they used to.
Yeah. I told Beth that this is my annual therapy shot of Jamie Norton to keep me through, give me a booster for the year.
We may end up having to do it more often.
She's just talking about topics I need help with.
And I do too. It's a mutual sharing, I'll tell you. And it's really great. Thank you so much.
Thank
for being you
Jamie.
And for being here and for caring about me. And we appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.